June 21st, 2009, you're listening to the TFormers.com podcast. TFormers.com podcast. I am your host, Iron High 1975, and joining me for this movie extravaganza 1 week before the show, I have the one, the only...
Ender!
Ender! Ender! It's me! It's Ender! I'm here! I'm alive! I can breathe again.
And then now you got to introduce Jason. So, and then on the other side of the ring, weighing in at 50 pounds.
Z Piper?
No. You guys. Okay, so if you...
You know, if you want to format to this, you have to say it up front, man. We didn't...
God.
This is like a sing-along. We're like Spock and Kirk trying to sing Row, Row, Row Your Boat.
Oh, don't get me on Star Trek 5. I can quote that whole movie.
So, this is not the Star Trek podcast. Don't start.
Yeah, we can't talk about
Star
Trek.
I was making a comment about disharmony. Let's not. We'll do a Star Trek podcast later. I'd love to talk about Star Trek 5. But...
Spock, we get in 12.
Spock, why weren't you singing along?
No, dude.
All right,
focus.
So, Transformers, the movie. Oh my God, so much stuff. So, starting off, we got tons of commercials. Let's see. One spot shows off the new kitchen robots. One spot shows off the new Marvel robots. Another spot shows Sam hanging out the Saturn action, you know, where he's flying through the air. Another spot is heaping loads of new footage. And then we have side swipes. Debut, by the way.
Debut, what a good piece of rock. Debut. It's a beaut. Debut.
I think my grandparents used to live in Dubuque.
Yeah.
All right. So, by the way, spoiler alert, don't listen to anything on this podcast if you don't want to know anything about the movie or you have, well, our friends in Europe have already seen it. I'm waiting to hear what the movie's two guys say. But,
well, you know what? I mean, it's like they're... Most of the stuff that we're reporting on today, it's like, seriously, if you've been listening to this podcast for a while, you already know most of it. There's only about maybe 8 or 9% new stuff. The rest is just stuff we've seen before. So it's not that bad.
Well, like, you know, we like the one spot show sideswipe transforming and then I believe slicing sideways in half. I mean, I believe that's what we're seeing there. I mean, if he's following up on... I guess.
Listen, how can we even really spoil or anything? We're getting like these little snippets of shots and then we're describing them. I mean, it could be anything.
That's true. Yeah. That's true.
You're so. Like, ooh, look at the marble bots. And I'm like, they're little steel ball bearings that just go bloop and they're a little robot. Big deal.
Yeah.
It's like a 3 second clip.
Well, I'm curious of what those actually are. Are those like, I'm guessing those are the Insecticons maybe? I don't know.
They're ball bearings though.
Yeah, but
I don't imagine the Insecticons being ball bearings.
Well, maybe they start out as marbles and then they scan something and then they become whatever the smallest thing is on the...
Maybe they're little microbots that hold Devastator together.
There you go. They're a bunch of rare earth magnets.
Well, yeah. So one of the things that somebody said is that one of the reviews is basically Devastator isn't necessarily exactly like the toy. It's more like just a random... This, you know, random Constructicons, which there seems to be, you know, multiples of the same type, just get together and then form Devastator. So it's more like the Constructicons are a little bit like what the Insecticons used to be back in the original cartoon when they could have clones of themselves.
They're like Decepticon red shirts.
That sounds lame. Is that confirmed?
Well, you know what? If I was looking at a picture of Devastator the other day, and one of his hands... is made of multiple steam shovels, like fingers. Like, no piece of construction equipment has five steam shovels sticking out of the end of it.
Yeah, so basically it's like just, it's like, at least somebody said there had to be at least 10 constructed concept form Devastator. So it's more of a hodgepodge of everything getting together and forming. You know, it's not necessarily like a planned, you know, there's no, you know, this guy forms the right foot, this guy forms something like that. It's more like everything gets together and just, you know, holds together type thing.
There's probably not too much point in us dwelling on it here, because if anybody really wants to know, they can just go read a review that somebody wrote in England, and I'm sure it will utterly spoil this for them in every way.
Right. I'm actually trying to...
Our conjecture is getting more and more meaningless here.
Right? Yeah, I know. And that's the thing. I mean, we're doing it. It's like, it's opening on Friday, and it's like literally, you know...
Isn't it opening on Wednesday?
I'm sorry. Wednesday. It's opening on Wednesday. I'm going to see it on Friday with Jason. That's why I'm thinking that. And
the whole universe revolves around you.
Pretty much, yes.
Absolutely. You do not know the truth of that statement. It's in the very fiber of his being.
Yes, Jason would get so pissed off when he lived with me, where I would walk out of the kitchen, turn off the light switch.
I'd still be in the kitchen working, but because he was done in the kitchen, everybody was done in the kitchen. So yeah, you just turn off the light.
Like, whoops, sorry, forgot about you.
More middle point. Initial E for egocentric.
Yeah. No, but all right. Well, then it's needless to say, you can go check out that footage and see a couple more clips of what you're going to be seeing in 5 days anyhow. So
looking at all of the, you know, just the cornucopia of the little 30-second to 2-minute clips from the London premiere and, you know, all the other TV spots and everything and the pictures that, you know, went with them, I have a few just – questions, maybe.
Okay, so we're talking about the London premiere coverage and whatnot.
Well, in addition, you know, but like there was also the clip where we were talking about, you know, with Sam hanging out of the Saturn, out of the car, you know.
Okay.
So, I mean, I don't understand. Like, they want Sam alive, right? Because he's got this knowledge in his head to tell him where the last of the Energon is and all that other stuff. Mm. So, Blackout. I just think it's like he's way too reckless with all of that. He, like, you know, basically hooks through the car, lifts it up. Sam, who, kids, is not wearing a safety belt and thus is why he is thrown out of the car. So safety belts, you know, and it's like Blackout doesn't even care. Sam could have just dropped to his death and then been done. And you know, then he gets over the factory and he drops them like 100+ feet face first through a roof into the bottom, which I think should have killed them. And then he doesn't even bother to look where they are in the car. They could have been splayed all around before he buzzsaws the damn thing in half and could have just chopped Sam up to bits.
I
think there's no answer to your question here, because I actually rewatched the first movie the other day just for some context to watch the new one. And I was struck again by something I'd always noticed, that in Barricade's first encounter with Sam, he's chasing him and he swipes his arm and hits Sam, and Sam flies about 20 feet and hits a car and breaks the windshield.
Yeah.
And the fact of the matter is Barricade's made of metal. And if something metal hits you in the back of the head hard enough to throw your body 20 feet, there's not much left of your head when you get there.
I agree.
That's been completely ignored in these. I mean, like, it's one of those physics things that they have just decided a transformer can hit a person without rupturing their outer membrane, which is just not true.
If I could play devil's advocate here, I think that part of the issue is you have to sort of make some what's the word?
If you're even going to go for, like, you know, just, you know, let it go as far as, you know, give them some allocation as far as what they can do, I'm doing that by simply going to a movie with huge 10-story-tall robots.
But I think you have to make some compromise in terms of trying to make the first film, at least with the first film, you know, they weren't quite sure what they were possible, you know, what was possible with the technology at the time. And you know, trying to make some sort of plot where it's like, okay, he's running. Well, how is this robot going to stop him? He's just going to swipe him.
Okay. Well, lots of movies take some real, I mean, especially with the special effects. I mean, the fact of the matter is that, you know, they show people jumping out of windows or getting knocked out with one punch. And, you know, in reality, a lot of the time you hit somebody, you hurt your hand. You jump into a window, you break. It doesn't.
Right.
You know, I mean, like, well, it's exciting to look at, and it makes visual sense, but it doesn't, you know, it's not going to make physical sense like that. And clearly, supposedly, the character is assuming that Sam is going to live through the, you know, being ripped in half by his blades or something. Whatever the deal is, he's just, they're just ignoring that. It's just meant to accentuate the action sequence. So I think you're asking a question that's just like, yeah, it would have been nice if they paid more attention to that, but they're not gonna. It's not really, you know, there's no character sense behind it.
Barricade transforming, reaching down, grabbing him, holding them in their chest in the car, and then taking them to the place is not really that exciting.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Like, you know, that's just a lot. Like, reality is not that much fun to watch. If it wasn't, I'll be sitting outside the theater.
It's just one of those things where it's like the little things bug me more than the big stuff. So I just wanted to just bring that up, that I thought that whole sequence was way too reckless. I mean, if you really want Sam dead, great. That is a superb sequence to do that. If you want to torture him a little bit, then kill him. But if you need his brain intact, you know, dropping him through a factory roof 100 feet up in the air is not really the best thing. But whatever. So that was one.
I think if you want to watch a character that hasn't – a movie that has any proper character motivation, watching movies that are not by Ortiz and Kurtzman is probably a really good bet.
Right. Exactly.
Also, too, I mean, Jace brings up the example time after time again in the first Superman movie where he catches Lois Lane falling, and that would, you know, have completely shattered her bones. And, you know, movies are becoming a little bit more aware of physics as they go about making them. You disagree?
I disagree. Yeah, they're aware of physics, just so that they know what they're throwing out the window.
Well, I think.
I think you assume too much. A lot of people this makes sense in my head. This makes sense in my thought of what I want to happen here.
Well, no, because
people are pretty unaware of the actual, you know, physical aspects of a lot of how things work and what would kill you.
Well, Jason brings up the one part Superman, then like the most recent Superman where he actually, you know, sort of stops the guy, slows him down, and then drops him on the ground, which was, you know, how physics should be done. And a lot of, you know, movie writers have said that they've tried to make these movies align with physics as much as possible. You know, that's why the writers said, you know, for Transformers, we didn't want, you know, Megatron transforming into a small gun, partially because, you know, we didn't want to do that whole mass deprivation thing. That,
all right, cry me a river there. They made the Allspark shrink.
I know that, and then of course they did.
And the
that,
Transformers can instantly look at something and change their entire form to resemble it. I mean, I really cry foul on that when they're like, "Oh, we didn't want to do that." It's like, well, but the, you know, the thing is, because that doesn't make visual sense. You could, if you can get away with it, if you can flash it in front of the audience quick enough, and have the audience feel like it made sense, even if it doesn't, it's okay. And I understand why they didn't do the shrinky thing, because watching Megatron transform into a tiny little thing visually would make an audience go, well, how the hell did that happen? And that takes you out of the movie.
Right.
But I think the same thing was kind of true with the Allspark shrinking. You're going like, where did it all go?
Right.
Well,
and,
exactly.
You know, when they're like, it's magic, it's like, I already have a 50-foot robot standing over here. Now I got to get magic?
Well, seriously? I don't think it was magic. It was probably just really advanced technology. But the biggest plot point I had with the first movie was they basically, all these Autobots go chasing after the Sector 7 people. Prime lets them crash into his foot and then rips off the top of the car and then, you know, lets them fall. And then after all this chasing sequence, they get away because they don't want to interact with the humans. I thought that was sort of like, so the last 20 minutes of the movie was all for show and really served no point to further the plot. So,
yep, I agree as well. It's like he's rescued Sam and Michaela and he's beating the hell out of the car. That's a little,
Yeah, so I mean, there were some issues with the first movie. I still enjoyed it. You know, I mean, that's.
There were too many issues like that with the first movie for me to enjoy it, I got to say. That was my big thing, was there was just too much. There was an excess of movie was the really big problem.
Well, there was an excess.
Like a third of it didn't need to be there. And that's just, I couldn't
deal. Could have done without the code jacker guy and the Australian chick, I think.
I think we digress, but I think we all have very valid points here. But we should like do a special show like to dissect the first movie.
Yeah,
well, that's a good idea. That's good. All right. Well, let's move on. So basically,
let's have a special on that.
Well, here you go. Not to derail, but I still have a few more questions.
Grindr, not Blackout, just to be correct.
I thought, well, we have no. I thought that the name was still up in the air
it's
as far
up
as
in the air, but I'm going with Grindr.
It's Grindr. It's Grindr.
All right. All right. So now this isn't quite Transformers, but since I saw it on the London thing, I have a question. They asked Shia about his injuries and stunts and things like that, and he says that they're gearing up for a new indie movie as
I
well
know.
As.
Did you hear that?
No, that's the first I've heard of it. They are actually considering doing another one?
That's the first I heard of it. He probably leaked that out accidentally, probably.
Okay, well, I was just curious if anybody else had heard anything.
Doing another one what? What's Cody talking about?
An Indiana Jones movie.
Oh.
He's like, gearing up for another indie movie, and I'm going to be a part of that. And then he says, and of course, they're going to be doing another Transformers movie. He was talking about, you know, movies that he's going to be doing stunts in going forward in the years to come. And I was like, what? Because I thought this was the last indie movie, the Kingdom of the Rubber Snake, you know, that we had.
You didn't realize that they were flagrantly setting up to use Shia as a new indie?
Well, I knew that, but
I think it was some story like Lucas rejected every script until they brought him on with that because it meant he could continue the franchise.
I mean, I'm hoping that Harrison Ford's at least in it a little bit. I don't want to see a movie of just Shia as Indiana Jones.
You'll see Harrison Ford kind of more in a Sean Connery kind of role.
Yeah, advisory.
Yeah.
So, all right. So then my other question, and this is, you know, I know that what I think I'm seeing is not what I'm seeing. So at the pictures, right, of the UK movie premiere and whatnot, when you click on them, you know, like you go through them, picture number 4 has got Michaela kind of, you know, laying her hands on Shia. You know, they're kind of not really hugging, but they're kind of striking a pose. And apparently this girl's got a ton of ink on her. I mean, I see new stuff all the time.
Right.
And she's got some script on her scapula, her back right shoulder blade. And I want to know what it says, because when I look at it, all I think it says, "We will all long for gilded butt lilies." And I know that's not what it says.
No, it's not butt lilies. It is butterflies is what it is. I remember I read that at some point.
All long for gilded butterflies?
Yeah, it's I think it's a line from either a play or a poem or something.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I didn't think it was butt lilies. So
no,
okay.
It's no. It wouldn't surprise me.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, they do a good job of hiding her tattoos in the movie, and I mean, you can always, I'm assuming you Photoshop those out and whatnot, but
that'd be expensive.
Well, there's a 34-foot talking Camaro 2 feet from her, so you know, can't be that hard.
Yeah,
right.
That kind of
Susan Bluebee and RC.
Yes.
Very, very.
I want to read this one. He didn't want to read this one. I get to read this one.
All right, go.
Okay.
Read it.
Okay. Our friends over at the Transformers live action movie blog are reporting that Susan Blue is tapped to voice RC for Transformers Revenge of the Fallen. The website also reports that Chris Griffith, who I don't know who it is, has lent his voice to Sideswipe. I love Sue Blue. I'd love to see her get a paycheck out of this. She is awesome. And she is the voice director on probably like every cartoon you've ever liked.
Pretty much. I mean, she did Transformers anime just recently.
Yeah, she did animated. She did Beast Wars. She got her start in voice directing. No one would give her a job voice directing because she was a woman, basically. There were no women voice directors. And somebody picked the crap off the bottom of the pile, and they were like, you know what? Look, we can't find anyone to voice direct this. So if you want to do this, you know, you can do this, but it's kind of crappy. And she went, okay, I'll take anything. And she took it, and it was the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And she was the – yeah, so she – that was her big start.
Good for her.
And that show was great. The voice direction was great on that show.
Well, she's a really talented individual to begin with, but it'll be nice to – I'm glad that they actually brought some G1 people back and did the movie. I mean, just having Frank Welker and her, it really adds a little bit of clout to the whole movie. So I think at least –
I'm wondering what they're actually going to have Frank Welker do.
He's doing Soundwave and
– Is he doing Soundwave, as they said?
Soundwave and Devastator.
Is that okay?
At least that's what's been rumored. He is doing something.
I hadn't heard anything solid.
Yeah, I mean from what the fans said in the chat room on our live show, he is doing Soundwave and it's listed with him in the Wikipedia, and he is doing the voice of Devastator. Which, quite honestly, what is Devastator probably going to do? But roar!
Yeah, I know. I mean, Frank Welker is the voice of every monkey and dog and you know. Every movie I've ever seen, so growling is well within his skill set.
I mean, literally,
I was upset they didn't find a part from something in the first movie. Just like, really, nothing squeaks. There's just, you can't get him in there for a minute.
Yeah, I know. It was like, you know, we can't put a dog in there or something, but I think that would have been sort
of... friggin' Chihuahua. He couldn't have voiced that Chihuahua. I bet you anything, somebody had to voice that Chihuahua. They never let those things talk for themselves.
What, the Chihuahuas?
The dogs. Every time, almost any time you see a dog in a movie, they have a dude making all the dog noises.
Really?
Because the dog noises aren't good enough. Yep. It's almost always. I mean, maybe some barks are recorded or something, but even those, a lot of the time, those are a person.
We had, speaking of, since she's doing the voice of RC, who is the motorcycle in the movie... the Last Element of the Revenge Motorcycle Trio finally revealed. Could we finally learn what this last third of Transformers Revenge of the Fallen Motorcycle Trio is? And TFG2 has posted a concept art of a never-before-seen motorcycle that does not look very much like Chromier RC, so this may be it. The alternate mode of this bot looks like to be based off the MV Augusta F4. This continues to lead to more confusion surrounding the motorcycles will be featured as RC in the film. I'm actually, we'll jump really quick into that since we have the story and we'll finish up our Susan Blue RC goodness. But basically, one of the tech specs on the toy for the red motorcycle reveals that RC is a separate bot and she is the red motorcycle. The bot reveals that she is the leader of the motorcycle trio and that she is her own individual robot. And it's just by coincidence that the other two are similar design. And you could take a look at that at the TFormers.com database entry. So we know RC's the red one. And let's see, the other one's Chromia. And then, so what's going to be the third one? Probably one of the other female Autobots, maybe?
I got to say that the look of this bot very clearly says Alita 1 to me. Look at the head.
Are you saying that sarcastically?
No. I think really? That head looks a lot like that. It just the coloration and the structure of the head. The Alita One's head was all kind of pointy and crowned out like that.
The red motorcycle, you think that looks...
Not the red, the purple one.
Oh, the purple one, yeah, but the red one, which is supposed to be RC, looks like a man.
Oh, I'm not looking at that picture. I don't know. Okay. Yeah, the red one's been confirmed to be RC, as I understand it.
Yeah.
I thought it was this purple one whose name was in dispute.
Oh, I see. Oh, you're talking about the previous story. Yeah, I don't know who that is, to be honest with you. So I do know that the first blue one is Chromia, the red one's RC, and the purple one we don't have confirmation on yet.
Right.
So
the blue one, Chromia, is actually out in stores.
Yeah, you can pick that up, so... all right. Well, anything else to say about besides them looking one wheeled and pretty awesome? At least it's
I hate the unicycle bots. I hate all the wheel feet.
Really?
I can't stand it. If it's an option, that's awesome. If it's just like straight up wheel feet,
you don't
pass.
Think it works a little bit with like side swipes, you know, sort of swirling in?
But Sideswipe can put his feet back down, to my understanding, too. Like, if it's an option, if you can put your wheels down, then it's a cool feature. Mm. If you don't have feet, that's kind of dumb by me.
I agree.
All right. Well, I'm not going to argue with that.
What is cool about being on a unicycle?
I don't know. I just figure, you know, you have to understand they're trying to think a little bit outside.
You ever
the box.
Seen anybody like ride into hand-to-hand combat on a unicycle?
No, you but know? If they have rollerblades, they might be more effective. I don't know.
Well, these motorcycle characters are not.
Isn't there a famous movie with some like guy slashing people up on rollerblades in like one of the?
Yeah, but he's not doing it on one foot.
Well, yeah, but I mean, if you had one foot, wouldn't that be awesome? I don't know.
You'd be gimping down and getting your ass shot.
Well, I mean, that's the suspension of belief between a human.
Well,
and
that's
a robot.
This is pushing it too far for me.
Sideswipe
roller skating into battle, I can deal with. Chromia, like you know, unicycle into battle, I can't. No. That's too much. That's just silly. Thrust didn't make any sense either.
Why, what's wrong with thrust?
Thrust is in like Beast Machines thrust, standing there on one wheel, just waiting for him to fall over in like every shot. That like just made no big
sense. I'm sorry. Yeah. I had to revert back to
that. And all his toys had to have little split feet or something so he could stand because it didn't work. think one of them came with a stand.
Did
I mean,
they
it's just
make a toy of Thrust and Destruction?
Oh yeah, they made two toys. They made one accurate and one not.
Oh, there you go. All right,
it's like the Hall Beast machines.
All right. Well, so the current score, if you're following along at home, folks, is Wheeled Robots, Jason and or I'm sorry, Z Piper and Ender, no, thumbs down, and Anthony, undetermined. So we'll see.
The way you were defending it, man, I was about to tell you to unlock your lips from Hasbro's teat.
I hold no allegiance to Hasbro unless they want to give me a job. But but I don't know. I think it looks cool with sideways coming out of there, transforming the and little ones following them on their little wheels. I think that's sort of outside the box thinking. But I don't know. I could be just a little bit too much of a fanboy. So, all right. Anyhow, before we get too distracted, moving on. So, early Revenge of the Fallen review says not very thought provoking, but fun. All right, I'll sum it up. Basically, yeah. People who went to see it in London said it's loud, tedious, and 147 minutes way too long. But basically, it's got action, explosions, bot kicking the crap out of people. And this movie is action-packed and has a plot that only drives along the action. Guaranteed multiplex crowd pleaser. So, I mean,
Not a shocker.
Yeah, not a shocker. I mean, that's pretty much what we expected. But, you know, that's pretty much what all the fanboys wanted, you know, basically wanted. So. And I do believe that Michael Bay has actually made it into the Guinness Book of World Records. Michael Bay pushing the limits of the action films to the limits with each film he makes. He's finally made his mark in the Guinness Book of World Records. And according to the New Zealand Herald, the record is for the biggest explosion on film with actors present. And the explosion occurred during the White Sands, New Mexico, filming of the Transformers Revenge of the Fallen. So it's basically, you could go see the photo of that. So, wow, he must have used a freaking amount of, what, TNT or something like that?
Or that's probably, I'm not sure what they use these days.
That's probably the battle sequence, I think, when they're probably fighting the Fallen, I would assume, right?
Don't know.
Don't know. Just depends on what shot he was filling with fire.
Yeah. Yep.
All right. Well, any thoughts on you know, the review or the explosion in the world?
Well, I think my thoughts on the review is, like, I'm a little concerned about them saying it's very how long it is, because I really think that was a problem in the last one. But the question is, you know, what do they fill that time with? And if, you know, I got no problem with, you know, a mindless action movie with not a fantastic plot. I mean, this is a cartoon movie. It's about giant robots. And, you know, I'm not looking for Voltaire here. But the problem in the first movie was they had all that extra time and they filled it with just nothing. It was just, you know, there were sequences. You sit down and watch that movie now and you're just like, what is this doing here? Like that hacker girl sitting in, you know, Anthony Anderson's room. And you're like, who, why, where are you even part of this? Like, so, but I get the feeling that this time the movie has been actually filled out with giant robots hitting each other, and if not, at least giant robots talking to each other.
Right.
There's
more.
There was, you know, I didn't report on this adequately. I don't feel like from BotCon, the writers did say one thing I found very encouraging about this movie and very explanatory about the failings of the last one, was that they literally were told to write a movie in which that if the studio decided the Transformers should not have the ability to speak, would still work, which pretty much comes down to being told to kind of write a bad movie. Because it was like, okay, if half the characters don't have characters and can't talk, the movie still has to play. Well, that so was... you just have to like cut all that out. You have to fill all that space with nothing. And that's why the robots don't almost say almost nothing. And what they say really does not drive the story, except for like Optimus's exposition at one point, which is largely visual.
Why would they have even wanted to make a Transformers movie where everything else that had come before it gave the Transformers the ability to speak? Was it a budgetary issue?
No. The studio, and I think maybe Bay too, I don't know, did not get it. They did not get that the Transformers were actual characters and that the audience would just look at them as big robot people. Because that's the deal. As much as they say to the contrary, no one, I don't think anyone gives, you know, two thoughts about giant alien robots and how they would actually behave. That would be really boring. What people are interested in is people who happen to be 50-foot tall robots. We want them to act like people. That's what we find compelling in stories. We want them to have human characteristics, because if they didn't, we wouldn't be interested in them. And I think the studio was not getting that they were not prop pieces, that they were not just the big robots in the background, that they were the story and they are just characters. Yeah. They just happen, you know, it's like having an animated character. If it was, you know, if it was a ghost, they'd probably have gotten it, but they weren't getting that these robots were characters. And now they get it and they were like, oh, well, yeah, just write the movie. And I think that that will lead to a more whole movie that's actually about the Transformers. I think it really explains why the last movie you're just looking around like, why are we talking to these people now? Because well, they had to fill hours with not robot time.
That was Michael Bay's original. He wanted the robots not to talk, and that was his original idea. And then finally somebody took him to Transformers camp and said, no, here's all this backstory. Here's what they do. Here's what the fans are all about, and et cetera, et cetera. And after that, then basically he had a little more direction, I believe, in terms of what they were going for in the movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, see, I was going to say that just, you know, proves to me. I mean, I use this analogy a lot. You know, it's like a kid with a gun. I mean, how clueless do you have to be? I mean, it's a 25-year-old property, for God's sakes, and you think that not having them talk is a good idea? For God's sakes.
Well, thankfully, somebody actually got in there and actually steered them in the right direction to sort of say, well, no, we actually have to have some of the robots talk because, you know, you have some iconic voices that basically make the whole Transformer movie. So, yeah. But I tend to think that there's just a little bit concerned that they weren't quite sure if they were able to pull it off.
No. They thought the general audience would not buy it. They thought people would not buy the talking robots. They thought people would go, why can they talk, and not be able to identify with them. But clearly that wasn't a problem.
Right.
And they've gotten over it. You know, a few $100 million later, they figured out that it works.
Right.
And I think what we're looking at from, you know, what this review says is something much more like Star Trek, where the story is going to be kind of shallow, weak, and stupid, but the movie's going to be enjoyable and propel forward anyway. The action's going to be solid, and
maybe the dialogue will be fun.
And
you don't have to have a story that's completely crazy, multi-paths, multi-layers and stuff to produce a good movie. I mean, you could have a very simple story and produce a very good action movie.
I'm not even saying – I bet the story won't be simple. I bet it'll be incredibly convoluted. Simple was not what I meant by dumb.
Right. No, but I'm saying –
I mean, Star Trek story, for instance, I think it'll be very similar to that. I think it'll be something they probably needed another hour to explain to you how it worked, and you're not going to get it. And it's going to be like – okay, but I don't care. You know, it's working. I get these are the bad guys and they want this, and these are the good guys and they want that, and now they're going to blow each other up.
Well, I think, too, there's just a lot of things that killed Star Trek was there was a lot of techno babble in the actual movie where they felt the need that they had to explain, you know, how everything works to the audience instead of just being able to, okay, have suspension belief, this is how it works.
It's
a very fine line of, you know, what do we explain in the dialogue that if we don't explain it, the audience is going to be completely lost. I think that's a very fine line
The general rule of thumb in film is, you know, is never say anything you can show if you can avoid it.
Okay.
And exposition wise, like if you can show the audience this happening, show it to them. Don't never have somebody stop and talk about it. So like that whole scene, you know, I'm sure we're going to have one of these in Transformers, but like the whole scene where like old Spock had to like stop the movie and like explain what was going on is kind of an epic failure of plot structure. But then again,
if they tried to actually film all those sequences, it would have added like an additional 30 minutes.
It couldn't have. And it was, you know, well, that's just it. They should have come up with a simpler thing is kind of the answer there.
Right. But all right, so, let's not divert.
Yeah, again, we're digressing. I'm only bringing that up as an example of their writing style because it is frequently they have to stop the movie and go, okay, so this is what's going on, everybody. And I mean, they might as well have like Patrick Stewart like sit down and read Christmas Carol for a few minutes for all the good that does everybody. So.
Well, hope I think you're right on track in terms of it'll be very much like Star Trek, but I don't think it's going to be. I think it's going to be more like what I remember seeing with Eagle Eye and like Armageddon, where it's just going to be very fast paced from the beginning to the end.
My prediction is that Jetfire will stop the movie and have a 5 to 6 minute sequence of having to explain what's going on.
Well, that's probably the case because he's the old cantankerous. He's the old cantankerous guy, and
I bet.
Well, you've read that. Yeah, haven't you read?
You know what? They have none of that's really been gone into in those things. It's glazed over. You know, all the media I've read is the shortened versions, and they don't go into that.
In terms of what?
Like I've read like the comic books and seen one other thing where that was either just kind of pushed over, or there was literally like, you know, in the comic books, there's literally like a block of text that's like so-and-so explained blah, 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 blah. And I would assume that that's where we'll get big exposition pieces in the movie.
Did you read the comic book from the movie?
Yes, I read the adaptation weeks ago.
Okay. Where'd you get that? Target?
I got that at Target, but it's everywhere now. Oh, you can get that anywhere now.
I may have to go pick that up.
Target just happened to have it like 3 weeks early for some reason.
What? Don't spoil it for us. But basically, you're saying that Jetfire is the one that's going to give the exposition and story behind the stuff.
I would from what I would story structure wise, I think that's where that comes in. I think you go to information at some point.
Okay. All right. Well, let's.
He's the Obi-Wan Kenobi of the movie.
By the way, how much was that comic book?
I believe $12.49 or something like that at the time. I think it might have been on sale, but
okay.
It's probably like
all right, well,
$12 and $15 depending on where you pick it up.
Yeah, I'm tempted to run out after I record this and go get it, but okay. Well, let's move on. We're going on all sorts of tangents this episode here. Okay, Paramount lets you become Optimus Prime on We Are Autobots site. And Z, would you please read this?
Oh, yay, I get the short and lame one.
Well, fine, you can read the next two ones. I'm just trying to make sure.
That's
he's just making sure you're awake, man.
Yeah, you guys are doing just fine. Yeah, the short of it is you hook up your webcam, you go here, it looks at your face, and it puts a Optimus Prime head over top of you, so you can look completely dippy, and you know.
And your life is changed forever.
Yeah, you can have your long, flowing brunette locks streaming out from Optimus's earpieces and just bop around. Yeah, it's pretty vapid. But, you know, for those people that want a few moments of distraction, there you go.
Man, you guys are so old and cantankerous. But, you know, back in the day, that would have been an awesome thing to do with your computer. But no, it's like, oh, you can look dippy and stuff like that.
Oh, it's so,
you know, pretend you're a
gimmicky
kid
use of the camera technology. If I was a kid, I'd have the voice changer helmet and be running around in the front yard.
Exactly. But still, I mean, just try to put yourself into the mind of a kid for once. You know, I am.
I'd rather have the 5-pack of party masks from $2.99 from any Walmart on Earth and run around with the actual mask on and like be looking at myself on the computer. I mean, like,
still, you know, we couldn't do that in the Apple IIe's when we were kids, you know. So I mean,
and we didn't want to.
Well,
yes,
I wanted to.
I wanted to play Oregon Trail. Damn it, that's all I needed back then.
Oh, don't get me started on Oregon Trail. Okay, moving on.
But yeah, be Optimus Prime. Woo. And it's like, you know, they've got like in the background of the thing, you're like, oh, I am Optimus Prime, you know, and it's like, but it's going to be your stupid voice coming out of it. It's like, oh my God, I'm Optimus Prime. This is so great. Yeah, anyway.
Send your hate mail to zpiper@transformers.com. No, God. All right. So, all right, you cantankerous fool. So the new official movie site's open.
You need to get some new words, man. You've used the word cantankerous.
Hello.
I lost you both for some reason.
Yeah, I heard nothing.
I thought you got mad at me, like, I'll show him who's got the power.
I'll give you cantankerous.
Great, you've got plenty of time to look up new words I can use while I'm disconnected.
Welcome to the Transformers Crankcast.
Yeah.
All right, you two. All right, so on to the next story. And Anderson returns to Transformers as voice of Joe plus Todd is the Fallen. Ender, please read this.
Nice. Okay. nicely. Variety reports that Anthony Anderson will return to the Transformers franchise as the voice of Jolt. It was a 2010 Chevrolet Volt. Not a Jolt, a Volt. In Transformers Revenge of the Fallen. He was the original in the original live-action film as Glenn, Maggie's hacker friend.
The hacker dude.
Okay. Oh, they actually got him back in the movie. Wow. Yeah,
sadly.
That's
enough.
Just...
unnecessary.
Yeah.
It's like, wow, we didn't have a stereotypically like ghetto black robot. We had a really bad negative stereotype of a black human, and now we're bringing him back for God knows what in the movie. That's awesome.
Jetfire doesn't like no one on the carpet, especially Decepticons.
Exactly.
Okay, once again,
Magazine's website also reports that Tony Todd will voice the Fallen. I can only remember he was like Kern from Star Trek, so I got like this Klingon voice going in my head now. Mr. Todd's website reported he would...
He was Candyman.
Somehow I missed those. I just never quite got around to that franchise. Mr. Todd's website reported he would voice a Transformer in the film back in May, but did not reveal the character. Well, he's got a good, deep, scary voice. I'm sure that'll work. They'll modulate it all to hell anyway, so it won't really matter.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the Tony Todd thing, I'm kind of behind. I'm like, all right, because he's definitely like one of those like top 15 actresses that like, you know, if they talk, you know who they are. I mean, you may not know their name, but you're like, oh, yeah, that dude, you know, and he's got a really specific voice. And I agree. But yeah, the Anderson one,
he is a funny guy in some ways, but just like his place in the last movie was just so, why are you here? And Tony Todd, I think he'll be a good voice for that, you know, but I do keep having this like, you know, thought in my head of like, the Fallen will return honor to the House of Morg, you know? Like,
yeah, exactly.
No, sorry, wrong movie.
Yeah, like, again, more Star Trek connections. What's up with that?
I think, wasn't Larry Nimoy tapped to play one of the voices?
Or maybe we're just dorks. I think that's really what the problem is.
Yes. Hey, I'm a geek, man. I'm not a dork. I'm a geek.
So there's also some sort of fake websites that they created for Leo Spitz, basically a blogging type websites that you can go to. And basically he's like, dude, I'm on a conspiracy person that's basically tracking down robots. So, and of course he's one, you know, the friend of Sam in college and whatnot. So nothing too exciting to report there, except that obviously they're updating the websites as we get closer to the actual movie.
Those sorts of things really do anything for the advertising, or do you think they just that's just like ad people justifying their existence?
Well, I think it's trying to tap into the blogging / the MySpace Facebook crowd, try and get them to sort of, you know, it adds more realism to the whole thing. I think is that they're trying to, you know, tie it into the real world.
Just that viral stuff. I mean, like, I know some of that, it works for some things. I just feel like in a movie like this, like a week beforehand, is that like,
I think it
really
works
generating any interest that wasn't already there.
It's sort of like the Matrix, the cartoons that they released between the first and the second Matrix. It's like just a little bit more to sort of get you into the movie, and it's a little bit more for the true fans, if that makes sense. At least that's my thought.
That's what I mean, but that's my point. Like, if it's really just for people who are going to go see the movie anyway, like, I don't know. I don't see the advertising value of these things. I feel like if you're interested in the Transformers movie, you might go check out this site. But, like, you're not going to be blogging and be like, hey, is this real? I don't know. Oh, wow, it's for this movie. Like, I'm wondering if that actually happens anywhere, or if that's just in, like, some 38-year-old ad person's imagination.
No, I think that basically... It's trying to tie the movie back into extra stuff that if you don't see the extra stuff, you're still going to enjoy the movie. But if you do see the extra stuff, it adds a little bit more to the movie. And I think that's what they started with, like, once again, the Matrix, you know, animated skits, the Animatrix. And then also, like, what they also did with the video game between the movie. It sort of ties into the whole universe. But it's not a requirement to be able to understand what's going on. Although I can make the argument that you needed to watch the Animatrix in order to understand where that kid came from. So, Jace, any thoughts?
I'm simply reeling. No, I'm fine.
God, come on, guys. You should be psyched that the movie's coming out in about 5 days.
I am. I'm psyched about that. I don't see why that means I have to be psyched about the, like, this, you know, the online serial tie-in equivalent.
Aren't you amazed at the amount of marketing promotion that they've produced for this movie? I mean, it's like 10 times compared to the first movie. I mean, they've done everything. We got M&Ms. We got toys. We got websites. We got game sites. We have things you could pick up at the comic stand. I mean, everything. I mean, literally, the promotion for this is just, for me, on a marketing standpoint, unbelievable. I mean, you should at least be impressed with that.
No, I mean,
I'm not sure. Yeah, I don't find that impressive. It's almost like sad in some ways.
All right. So next week, you know, Jason and Ender are going to do their old show called Cantankerous Old Transformer Fans.
Seven.
And I'm going to start my own show called The Happy Gobot Hour.
Piper and Ender's Is It Crap or Does It Suck?
Yeah, exactly. There's no positive. It's like, I give it 2 thumbs down. Well, I give it a big pile of dog poop. Yes. But I mean, I agree that there's a ton of marketing going into this, but it does take it to disgusting levels. I mean, I was going to see the movie regardless. And I realize that a lot of people may not be aware of the Transformers that may have gotten sucked in. But yeah, it's like, we don't need Transformers the toilet paper. We don't need, you know, like Transformers the laundry detergent. You know, we don't need everything crammed down our throat every moment of every day. And that, to me, it's just – it's the over excess that's just a little disgusting to me.
Think of the market values. Transformers laundry detergent transforms your darks into whites. Something like
Exactly. With the power of Energon.
Power of Bleacher John.
Yeah.
I mean, like, I reported this week on something that it's a product in the Philippines, and it's I'm a collector of Optimus Prime, so it upsets me I can't get this thing. But it's like each package of this product, which I'll come to tell you in a second, comes with a limb of Optimus Prime or the torso. And those in turn are school supplies of some variety. And they all combine together to make an Optimus Prime. And each limb is included with a kilo package of hot dogs. And for those unfamiliar, that is 4.4 pounds.
Oh my God.
This is the kind of tie-in that's also happening.
That's terrible. A lot of hot dogs.
Yeah, it's like, you know, do you realize how many hot dogs that is if you want all 5 parts of Optimus Prime? I mean, how long is this promotion to go on? A couple of weeks?
Just host a backyard barbecue and just bring a lot of Pepto-Bismol. I mean, you know, it just...
Backyard barbecue for the local regiment. I don't know.
are they not selling enough hot dogs? Would you say in Thailand? Is that what it was?
No, it's in the Philippines, and to my understanding, those hot dogs are made of the exact same ingredients as the limb itself. So they're not exactly the most natural product in the world. I imagine they're fairly preservable.
Well,
you sell by the kilo.
Okay, Bay says, never said I was Queen Transformers. So at the beginning of the week, there was a story that Michael Bay said, I'm done with Transformers after number 2. And then so the spinning continues after we relay the news earlier today. There was the last flick with the franchise. The man himself is calling shenanigans on the report that came out from WENN. Never said it, just wanted a vacation is more to the point. He points to his official message board, Shoot for the Edit. And what about the frustrations about his negative critics? No, I don't read the good or bad reviews. His post is below. Ha, love press how they spin. Never said it. Just one education is more to the point, and no, I don't read good or bad reviews. End quote.
Fire bad!
Should have read that in a Griblock voice.
Sorry.
I think he was probably talking a little out of turn in terms of he knows that the studio is pre-counting all their money right now and would really like a bigger check for the next movie. Saying something vaguely threatening will make them feel like they have to, you know, pony up. I think that was I don't know. See, from what he said, I'm having trouble determining whether he said anything at all
Well, he could have just been saying something that was taken out of context. He could have just been saying, like, yep, I'm done, you know, jokingly. And then somebody grabbed that and took that completely out of the context of the situation. You know, we pretty much know him and LaBeouf, and I think, was it Megan Fox or what, signed on for three movies. So we know that they're at least on for three movies. But I think he said he wanted at least take a year off and take a vacation, and maybe if not make a non-exploding movie was one of his concerns. But
can he do that?
Well, he said he wanted to make sort of one of the stories we read last week, I think, was a more low, like an art house flick or something like that. But you know, I think that, you know, after you've done this for a while, you need to sort of recharge your batteries, and then you'll probably come back and finish three, and then I think you'll be done after that. So, I mean,
summer, Michael Bay wears a beret. Yeah, I don't think so.
Well, the other thing is, too, is that, you know, he took a salary reduction in the first movie to keep the production in America because he wanted it to do with his crew. So, I mean, he could be sort of saying, you know what, screw these guys. I want to get paid right for the next two movies. And maybe he is a little bit pawny up for that. So I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, well, this would be the time to make the studio feel like, you know, signing something that said they were going to give him a lot more money. And, you know, you never know, this quick retraction might have been Paramount showed up with a, you know, contract the next day with another zero behind it.
Right.
He was like, I feel better now.
Yeah. Like,
my batteries are recharged. The south of France isn't looking so good all of a sudden.
I'm interested in actually seeing if he could pull off an art house flick, because the only thing I can think of is like Michael Bay's Ragamuffin Poets explode on the screen, and they literally explode. They're like these young poets that just explode on the screen. There's the occasional hot chick that comes in and shows her tits, and there she goes. That's Michael Bay's art
Dead
house flick.
Poets Society 2.
They're really dead now.
Would it be funny if he did like sort of like a Clerks at like type movie, but in every at the end of every scene, the main character that was talking exploded?
Wouldn't that be like Michael Bay's Flying Circus?
Yeah, exactly.
How not to be seen, Michael Bay style.
God, we're going off on all sorts of nerd tangents on this show. All right, so USA Today shows off Power Up Optimus Prime. And this, could this image be any smaller series? The article published in today's edition of the USA Today shows a powered up Optimus Prime in a combination of Prime and Jetfire. And the article captures a day in the schedule of Transformers Revenge of the Fallen, director Michael Bay's principal photography scheduled while in New Mexico. The article talks about how Mr. Bay operates as well as his interactions with the cast and crew. The article is a fine read, and the images they reveal are too. If only they were a little bigger, it'd be all fine and dandy. Is this powered up to Optimus Prime next to the Sphinx, what I'm seeing?
I haven't seen the image, but I've had a powered up Optimus Prime keychain for like 6 weeks, so it's not really that exciting news-wise.
Well, I mean, I'm just looking at the photos here, and it doesn't look like he's got the armor on. That could be wrong.
No, he's if you look at his torso, his chest area, it's a lot more rounded, and there's a lot more of the gray armor panels on it. Like, he's lot more bulky.
Actually, you know, he's only partially armored up there.
Okay. Yeah.
That's what I was
thinking. That actually isn't the whole deal. He'll have more Jetfire on him.
Oh, okay. Because maybe it's like half of it or something. So
it's like the legs.
Well, exactly. Well, I don't want to debate that because I want to know what Jetfire actually does to, you know, does he just sort of say, I'm dead now, so use my armor? Or does he say, I'm going to morph into you? So I'm curious in how that goes. But I guess we'll just have to wait. I'm thinking out loud here. Bear with me. I'm just one of the things about that's really.
I know the answer to that question.
I know you know the answer. That's why as I'm saying that, I'm like, damn it. He knows the answer because he's read the comic. And it's
well. Can you tell us?
No, I don't want to be. See, I don't want to be ruined on that. So, you know what? I'll take off. But well, no, I got to play that back anyhow.
Yeah, you're gonna have to get. You know, well,
message Jason privately because if you say anything, I have to edit the show anyhow. So I'm gonna find out. So,
I just think it's funny because, you know, the movie has been 94% ruined for us already. And this last little chicklet of knowledge you were so adamant to not find out about.
Well, you know, I think what's really funny is that all I feel like Bay did by being like, I'm going to be all uber secretive about the movie and we're not going to tell anybody and there's going to be all this disinformation and yada, yada, is just make people claw to spoil every stupid little thing they could before it came out. I really feel like if they were just like, yeah, we're making this movie and, you know, if you want to know about it, you will. Like, people who have been totally spoiled would never have bothered to look. It's like, it's just the, like, forbidden fruit kind of thing. Like, having somebody tell you, like, you can't know about my movie. It's like, oh, yeah?
All right. So that being said, spoiler alert, what actually happens with Jetfire?
Like, to my knowledge, spoiler alert,
beep, beep, beep,
Megatron kills Jetfire.
Okay.
And Jetfire, while he's dying in some way, offers his parts to Prime. And I don't know if they just like morph together, if there's what process that happens by. I almost wonder if it won't be something related to the process by which Devastator combines.
Gotcha.
Or if it will be related to, again, spoiler, the Autobot Matrix of Leadership, which will be in play at that point in the movie.
Do they actually say that name in the comic?
Yes.
Okay.
In fact, that the it is specifically the Matrix of Leadership for a reason, to my understanding, within the story.
All right, that's enough spoilers.
Okay.
I want to be a little bit surprised by Wednesday night. So.
And see, and I always thought that, you know, because the whole, you know, thing, Autobots, Decepticon, it's all been about yin and yang, right? You know, balance, you know, to keep the war going, keep the fans interested, all that kind of stuff. I always thought the Decepticon should have had, like, the Matrix of Badassery or something along.
The Matrix.
Somebody made something up, a specific name for a Matrix of.
Wasn't there, like, a negative or dark Matrix from.
There was a dark Matrix. There was, like, there was a G1 episode where they offered, the Quintessons offered Galvatron a Matrix that didn't exist. It was a Decepticon Matrix. They might have had a name for that. I'm trying to remember.
I'm sure the fans in the forums will let us know.
Yeah.
All right. So last bit of movie news. My God. Transformers Revenge of the Fallen USA press conference. Jace, if you would.
Why, certainly. So thanks to Silas Lesnick, who transcribed the Transformers Revenge of the Fallen USA press conference. So just in from their stop in Moscow, the news event includes a lengthy questions and answers session with Michael Bay, Megan Fox, Josh Duhamel, or however you pronounce his last name, Tyrese Gibson, Kevin Dunn, and Ramon Rodriguez, who were all on hand to answer questions about the Transformers sequel and their careers. This is actually quite long, so we probably would want to.
No, you don't have to read the actual transcript, but if you want to go read it, you can go to the tformers.com website, and the whole transcript of the whole thing is nicely presented for your entertainment value. So. All right.
That was a lot of movie news, man.
Yeah, well, I mean, this is the week before the movie, so what'd you expect? All right, moving on to toy news. Ender, why don't you take the mud flaps, ejector, and Voyager bit?
Okay. We got in some official images of Transformers Revenge of the Fallen, deluxe skids, and mud flap in their ice cream truck version. There's a Scout ejector, Voyager long haul. We've seen these guys in the wild before, but here is how Hasbro wanted you to see them. We have other looks at other figures that you've seen before, including Human Alliance Sideswipe with Tech Sergeant Epps, but we decided to throw them in for good measure. I'm excited about the ice cream truck.
Now, see here, it looks.
I might pick up the toaster.
Now see here, it looks well painted and it looks nice, and then the toy we get always looks much crappier.
Right, like this one, the picture lends itself to more of a purplish hue, you know, or like a metallic pinkish in some of the other previews that we saw. And I dug those, but the ones that we talked about last week, those literally were My Little Pony Princess Pink, and that was just gross.
Right, I agree with you.
You know what I'm noticing in the toaster and in skids and mud flap, and I bet it's going to be present in a lot of the other kitchen bots that I really don't like. Is the eyeballs of different sizes.
Yeah, exactly. Like they're squinting at you and whatnot.
There's they've got like the cartoon eyes, and it's just like, again, from the people who are like, we can't have them have humanish faces. They're not human. But it's like, but we can have them look like, you know, Wile E. Coyote.
Yeah. I agree with you. They could have toned that down a bit, but I think that's trying to make each individual robot distinct, which I'm looking at long haul. What kind of huge butt dump truck is this? This looks like a dump truck that's like four stories high.
That, you know, there are dump trucks that are of a size that is truly staggering.
Is there?
Yes.
There are.
Oh,
there,
yeah.
Because it looks like there's like a railing around the front of it to use the
There thing. Is. There is. If he's modeled after like the true dump trucks like that, as a person, okay, you would literally, if you were standing next to it, you might come up to the top of the rim of one of the wheels. And these are huge earth-moving machines. Like if you go to like TLC or Discovery Channel and like search their archives and stuff, they've actually done shows that highlight the biggest like machines on the planet. And these things, I forget what they're called, but they're usually in use in like quarries and other like just huge projects. And it is absolutely, they do exist that big.
Okay. I'm looking at that just going, my God, that looks like a gigantic dump truck. Does that even exist in real life? But I guess.
Yeah, there are pieces of construction equipment that are actually, people say they should be dubbed like military grade because they're actually just sort of these engines of destruction.
Yeah.
Like bulldozers that are meant to just destroy a town in minutes. Like,
yeah, I mean,
they really don't have a purpose besides to really attack something and rip it apart in a really short amount of time.
Well, speaking of that, does that also play off for the next story, which is the Mixmaster? Is that like a giant mixing drum as well?
I don't know about that. I've actually seen that toy. And I don't know. It's not. I didn't find it terribly impressive. It looks like it's just a cement mixing truck.
Well, this is the one with the
regular variety.
The G1 colors that are located that we actually we touched about briefly.
I haven't seen that one, but I meant the toy itself. I mean the design. It is not meant to be a giant one.
Oh, okay. You said you haven't seen one that actually would be like a giant.
What? No, and logistically that they don't exist like that because of the weight involved and the fact that you have to keep spinning it, okay?
Right. Yeah.
If you were to make a huge version of that as big as the Earth Mover that Long Haul is, like it's modeled after its real-life counterpart, the amount of just energy it would take to spin a drum of that size would just make it completely impractical. So, they do not exist in Gigantor form.
Okay.
There At least go. Not the truck.
There you go, kids. You're learning something new by listening to the podcast. All right.
Edutainment.
Yeah. Revenge of the Fallen, the game, Deep Six Mission Walkthrough with 6 days, full days left, or actually at this point it'd be about four or three, until the release of the movie. Game Trailers is pumping up the hype with a video walkthrough from the game's Deep Six Mission. And this game launches once again on the 23rd, and you can go watch the movie if you want on the TFormers.com site.
Also, it's not bad. I mean, decent gameplay footage, you know, it's worth a watch.
Okay. And or anything?
You might think I know more about the game than you do, but I couldn't possibly comment.
Absolutely.
That's right. What's the day that you could talk about that?
I believe that would be the 23rd would be the day that, you know, if I knew anything, I could say something about it.
Okay, so Jason's coming over. We're going to go see the movie at 7 o'clock on Friday. We'll probably be back around 10 o'clock. So if you're available at 10 o'clock Friday night, you want to jump on and give us a review of the game?
I will give that a shot.
Okay.
If I've played the game by then.
Okay. Joey talks about RC. And okay, so oh my God, that leads us to comic news, and who do we have here but the comic expert? I have to say, I looked at the previews of All Hail Megatron number 12. Wow, Omega Supreme kicking Devastator's butt.
Yes,
Ender, tell us you have to tell us about this. How is the series panning out at its conclusion here?
This series is going to pan out big. This whole issue is going to be a giant fight from start to end. There's good character moments in there. It's a good, fun, sweeping climax to the series. Everyone should read these. This could be like the best Generation One fiction ever.
Really?
Like I'd say very probably is. And it really ranks up there in all of Transformers fiction in my mind at this point.
Now, why is that?
I think it's part of it is just that this is, I think, the first time someone's really kind of taken the basic character set out again and really just played out a climactic story with them without a lot of like reinvention. This plays off of the very reinvented IDW universe. It does connect with that, but it has been very deliberately made. Like, you can pick up All Hail Megatron and read it, and it will be enhanced by the reading of other things. But you really can just read this as a straight up Transformers story. And it has probably the best characterization of these characters I think I've ever seen, bar none. Shane McCarthy, the writer, just really nailed everybody, artist is fantastic. Let's see if I can pronounce this right. Guido Guidi. I'm sorry. You're talking?
Yeah, I know.
Why?
It's CB. It's like breaker. Here's my question, because a lot of people were complaining around between issues 4 and 7 or 8 that it was sucky. What changed, and did those issues that was maybe a lot of lead up actually deliver once you got to the later issues?
It does, and this is actually really a classic problem with IDW, is that their Transformers comics are really meant, their stories are meant to be in trade paperback. They write these things and they know, like, okay, they're going to put this 6 issues here and this is going to be this, and this is pre-planned. And they try to make each individual issue its own issue unto itself, but especially towards the beginning of a 12-issue story arc. I mean, like, think of watching, like, Die Hard and making, 6 minutes while like John McClane is in the bathroom talking to his wife in the beginning of the movie into its own little part of the story and have a beginning, a middle, and an end. It's just not that exciting.
Right.
It's just, nothing has happened yet. There's no reason to be invested. And honestly, by the time I came into this series in the middle, by the time I came into it, it was already starting to ramp up. But it really kind of started out in a, like, the Autobots had been defeated, and we'll tell you why later. And we're just going to move on. And you were in like 6 issues before you really understood what was happening. I think if you sat down and, were reading the whole thing, that would be fine. But I can understand why people were like sitting there with issue 3 in their hand, 4 weeks to go to get to the next one, with no explanation of what was happening, going, what is this?
Right.
And that's the problem. And it's a valid problem, but it's totally logistical. It really does. I mean, in a retrospective way, it's hard to complain about that in the face of the actual product. But I can totally get why people were like, what's the deal with this?
Would you say it's a little bit like, I don't know if you've seen the new Battlestar Galactica, where it was a lot of buildup, but where Battlestar Galactica, a lot of people say, failed to deliver on the final episode. This seems to be like, well, there's a lot of setup, but we're really going to deliver at the end.
Yeah. No, this is really set up to be a really good climactic Generation One confrontation of some, classic characters, and really give you what you want, and it delivers on that. I mean, like, point in case, in this preview, we see Omega Supreme, slamming Devastator into the Statue of Liberty. Clearly there is, something going on there. They've pulled out these characters and are really letting them go at it. And, this is kind of the G1 like you remember it.
Right.
These are deep characters. This is, good story. This is, and it has a lot of the depth, of even some, Transformers philosophy to it.
Well, I know.
That doesn't get gone into a lot. It gets expounded on, I think, outside of the fiction, you know, in sort of a mirrored way, but this really has it right in there.
Well, yeah, you were talking with Dave on the on the one show about you know, the whole Starscream having to prove himself and stuff like that. So, I mean, that in itself seems like they actually decided to give Megatron a reason for, you know, why he's evil and such, and the whole background behind that seems to be really, really amazing.
And that continues to play out in this issue. There are important moments about that. There's also, you know, the Autobots in previous IDW comics have been a little more callous than we're used to them being. There's a shift in this series that really plays out here in their attitude about what they're doing. And it's really just, you know, a fantastic set of comics. And there's also been a lot of complaints about continuity errors between it and other IDW series. I gotta say, I don't see that. The only ones I've seen that are valid are people complaining about people's alt modes looking different without explanation. I don't know. I just feel like, you know, when Batman decides to change the style of blue underwear he wears on the outside of his pants, well, like, it's not a continuity error if he doesn't stop and go like, Alfred, I think this particular brand of Fruit of the Loom is a little chafing. You know what I mean? Like, you know, why do we, you know, it's like, okay, so Sideswipe has his engine on the other side now. Really? That's a continuity error? You know, this is a new series. It's supposed to be a year later. He moved it. Okay?
So there's, like, what are some of the continuity errors that people are complaining about?
That's the only valid ones I can find is that.
Okay. So is it a thing like they start using like this classic version of the alt mode instead of like didn't Ironhide like changes his mode to the new toy after like halfway through? Or am I?
No. Actually, I think it was Sideswipe and Sunstreaker changed, but they changed at the beginning. Oh, and the Seekers changed to a more traditional look.
Okay.
Than they had before. And I think a lot of that has to, I think Hasbro actually asked them to, like, can you make these look a little more like our toys?
Right, right.
They went with that. But it is a series that's meant to be set a year later than the last time we saw any of these characters. So I really kind of chalked that up to, like, somewhere in that year, they decided to do something else. And it's mainly for aesthetic reasons, but it's Batman's underwear. It's just, okay, so they got 15s now.
But all in all, it's pretty much from what I've gotten for everybody. It's been a lot of buildup, but it's really turning out to be an amazing series. And I have yet to listen to, I know Kello Prime interviewed Shane McCarthy. I have yet to get to that interview, but I know that, you know, one of the questions was he wanted to ask, you know, why did you do this? Why did you set this up and whatnot? So I'm curious to see how this all plays out. And how many issues do we have left to go?
This is the end of the story. Issue 12.
But don't we have, like, the Coda?
The Coda ones, you know, those are really going to be very separate. They're still attaching the name to them.
Okay.
But those are more about bridging All Hail Megatron to the monthly ongoing series they're going to have. And it's meant to answer a few of the unanswered questions.
Gotcha.
I guess maybe some of the things they're going to do in there are things people are calling continuity errors. But I really kind of feel like just because they haven't told you yet doesn't mean there isn't a reason. You know, and I think we're going to get a lot of those reasons, and, you know, that's what that's about, is so they can move into a different thing where there's no unanswered questions. It's just a little, you know, these are the things we've been trying to find a place to tell you, and we're just going to tell you them here flat out. Cool. And the Coda is going to be two-part comics. They're going to be, you know, one part is going to be, you know, there's going to be a story about one character and then a story about another. I think the first one is an Ironhide and Prime story. I'm not sure who else is going to be in that one.
Well, real quick, what else comic news is there?
Well, let me, I just have a quick question because, again, I haven't read these comics. Okay, I've been out of the comics for a little while. I did read the IDW stuff when they first started rebooting the series, you know, several years ago. My simple just question, you know, because out of curiosity is, do they actually kill characters in these and do they stay dead? It's a simple question.
So far, very much so. If they kill you, the characters have stayed dead so far.
Okay. Because that was like...
Sometimes they will allude at the end of a killing that a character is okay in some way, and then those characters will not stay dead. But so far, I mean, you know, this isn't a spoiler. In All Hail Megatron, Sunstreaker's dead.
Yeah.
Right.
He's
well, that's
dead, and
that's one of the reasons
he seems to be staying dead. And they had an opportunity, I thought, to bring him back, and they didn't. He's dead.
where that's one of the reasons why I was asking, because I forget exactly which series it was, but it was one of the very earlier ones. It was Superion flew directly into a missile to keep it from, you know, hitting its target, and there was a big – I mean, as far as you could tell, he was totally destroyed, and I didn't know if they would bring him back or
That was a Dreamwave.
Oh, Dreamwave. Actually, I'm sorry.
That was Dreamwave.
Thank you.
Within the scope of that series, he did stay dead. Superion did. Wheeljack as well died in that series. But that's separate continuity.
I forgot. Are they both still working concurrently, Dreamwave and IDW?
No. Dreamwave, like, blew up. That's why IDW does it now.
Yeah, fill Jason in real quick with what happened. Didn't the guys from Dreamwave go to IDW?
Yeah, they basically spent a bunch of money they didn't have. The Transformers were working out really well, as I understand it, and they decided that meant all their comics would, so they put out a whole bunch of stuff and overextended themselves and ended up filing for bankruptcy. And really tragically, too, they were in the middle of a decent set of stories, and they just one day just weren't there anymore.
Oh, wow.
They had an issue in the pipeline that was all about Alita One and the Fembots, and it never even got colored.
Yeah, but then Dimos.
There were previews out for it and everything.
Did most of those guys, they went to IDW, right?
Quite a few of them did. I'd have to look.
Who was the main artist for Dreamwave?
You know what? There isn't a main one. They have quite a few good people who are working on this.
Who was the leader guy that was on the DVD? Interview on the DVD.
Interview on the DVD.
Yeah, remember the Asian guy that was the name.
Are you talking about Dreamwave?
Yeah, Dreamwave.
Dreamwave, I think it was, what's his name, Pat Lee?
Yeah,
I think it was the guy.
Yeah.
Yeah,
Did he go to IDW?
No. I don't think Pat Lee went to IDW.
Because there was the guy that was on IDW that was interviewed on one of the DVD box sets from Rhino.
No, a few of the people did. Yeah. I think Don Figueroa did. I'd have to look. I've read most of this stuff, but I don't want to speak out of turn. I'm not entirely certain who went where. The artist on this series was Guido Guidi, who actually, interestingly enough, someone had a question. And we all had a question in the forums about who a particular character was that we didn't recognize, and he popped up and answered it.
Oh, really? Who was it?
Yeah. It was a Universe 2.0 character. Who, you know, while being technically G1 in that way, was not somebody we all recognized.
Oh, gotcha.
We thought maybe it was a Combaticon or something, but it was a product placement, I guess you could say. But it was kind of cool he popped up to tell us that. And another comic news. A Spotlight Cliff Jumper came out this week.
How's that?
And it was pretty good. It has the thing that bugged me about it is I felt like it didn't have the payoff it needed. Mm-hmm. The art's really good and the writing's really good. And the problem with these spotlights sometimes is they just don't have enough time for everything they need to do.
Right.
And I really felt like where they ended up cutting a little time out of was really where the payoff of the story was. And it really suffered for that. And especially because the art is really good and the writing is really good. So feeling like there's this part where they're like, well, we're just going to leave this to your imagination. And it's just like a crime. It's like... I don't want that left to my imagination. I want you guys to try that.
Right.
Really. That's what I've been reading this for over 20 minutes.
So
overall, it was pretty good. I mean, like, it's hard to complain about it. It was a really good-looking book, and it was a really well-written book. But it's a good book, not a great book, and it could have been a great book with two extra pages.
Cool. So, all right, guys. I know Jason's got to go here fairly soon, so I want to wrap this up real quick with thoughts before we go see the movie. I mean, we're basically 3 days before we see the next Transformers movie. What are your thoughts going into this, guys?
Well, I mean, personally, I mean, I'm hoping that it's going to be decent. The 2.5-hour runtime, I don't really care. You know, even if there are some mindless bits in there, I like longer movies. You know, because at least it's a gamble. I mean, yes, there might be a lot of mindless fluff in there. You know, like what Ender was talking about in the first one, but at least you know, there might be some extra stuff in there that I can grab onto. I like the 4-hour, you know, Lord of the Rings trilogy extended movies. You know, I do. I want a butt-numbing experience. So two and a half hours to me is great. You know, as long as, yeah, we can cut down on, like, you know, the Anderson thing and, you know, playing Dance Dance Revolution, you know, while you manage to, you know, hack everything on your home PC. You know, if we can, you know, minimize that kind of stuff, that's fine. But yeah, I mean, I'm pretty much just expecting it to be, hey, here's something cool. Hey, here's a pretty girl. Hey, here's an explosion. I mean, you're not going to get much more, you know, intellectual than that. But, you know, I mean, here's hoping. I'm hoping that we'll be all be pleased with it.
And Ender, your thoughts going into the movie?
I was pretty harsh on the first movie, and largely because of structural problems. So I feel like if they can correct those structural problems and make the story a little more solid, it doesn't have to be intelligent, just like have a beginning, a middle, and end, and not take me off down a bunch of tangents, and have the robots have characters and purposes in the story rather than just hitting each other. They can just hit each other up, but I mean, just be like part of the actual story. I think this movie will be a lot better, and I have very high hopes for that based on the spoilers I've seen. And, you know, I think a lot of what, for me, coming, you know, how you feel when you come out of a movie has a lot to do with how much you enjoyed it. And I feel like the last movie was actually a little anticlimactic, which was a little bit of a problem.
Right.
In terms of, I really felt like, you know, Sam put the cube in his chest and we panned out, and I was like, that's it? Really? Like, we're not going to do a little more? Because I don't know. It didn't work for me in that way. But having read comic book-wise what the climax of this movie is, it looks like an actual climax to me, and I'm hoping that it will be a better structured, more fun experience. And I think it's going to be, you know, just like those reviews said, it's going to be just kind of some mindless action-y fun, and that's great. And I'm looking forward to it. I have very high hopes. I'm actually looking forward to seeing this movie. I was worried I would be going in with dread, but I'm actually looking forward to it.
I as well. And it seems like just yesterday I came out of the first movie just sort of gleefully feeling like a little kid again. And definitely hoping that's going to be the case with this one. I don't know. It seems like just yesterday I was like, I can't wait till they do the next one. Now the next one's here, and I'm just like, oh my gosh, I can't wait to see it. And as I've seen various, you know, the additional footage that came out this week, I am getting more pumped up and more excited. And then I got one of those decals, but magnets for my car, and been driving around with an Autobot symbol on my car recently. And I tell you. It's fun to get people to look at you when you're driving around. There's a little kid on a motorcycle that was following me wherever I was going, and I was just sort of like, yep, for once my car is actually somewhat cool, even though it is a piece of crap Chevy. So, but I'm definitely looking forward to this movie, and Jason will be here to enjoy it with me, which makes it even more exciting because then I get to hear his, you know, crotchety or excitement, with, you know, a little bit of both. I think actually Jason will enjoy this movie, and we will review it. We'll be online Friday. I'll see if I can do a live show. If not, we just may record it. But Ender, if you're around, feel free to hit us up on Skype. We'll try and make it happen and get some reviews of everything else and your thoughts. And there you go, folks. We've made it 2.5 years from the first movie. So glory be to Michael Bay. Yes.
All hell, Michael Bay.
I didn't know what to say there.
I'm gonna have to hold back on that one, I think. We'll see.
All right, guys. Well, thank you again. And this is Iron High 1975.
Zip Viper.
And Ender.
Good night, folks.
What did I get you for?
I bought a car. Turned out to be an alien robot. Who knew?
The T-Formers.com podcast is copyright 2009 T-Formers.com. Special thanks to the Cleveland band Gravity for use of their music. Go check them out. MySpace.com/Gravity33. check out our forums and leave your feedback or send us an email at podcast@tformers.com. This has been an ENI production. All rights reserved.